Welcome to Football Meekly. Here today you have Mick Lemaire.
Oh, yeah.
George Cochrane.
Hello.
Alex Bird.
Oh, yeah.
Steve Guyford.
Good afternoon.
I'm James Francis. Unfortunately, Maxwell Walls can't be with us today. Today we're going to talk about the international matches that took place over the weekend and last night. England obviously drawing 1-1 with Montenegro after Wayne Rooney put England 1-0 up. They obviously equalised towards the end of the second half. And England remained 2 points behind Montenegro in that group. Obviously, they will host last night's opponents at Wembley this autumn, so they do have a chance of overtaking them. But Mick, can we say this was 1 point gained or 2 points lost?
I think probably in looking at the game, probably, yeah, 1 point gained. But, you know, a side ranked as highly as we are, even though some of the FIFA rankings are questionable, we probably should be going there and getting 3 points. But I don't think we really have the quality at the moment to go and do that, which is worrying. But I was just saying before, I think we'll get 9 points at Wembley in the three games. And then we've got to play
Poland
away.
Ukraine away.
Ukraine away.
Although probably not in Kiev.
And again, we'd hope to get a point. And if we do that, I expect to win the group. So I still expect us to win the group. I do think Wilshere will make a difference. I really do. And, you know, it is a difficult place to play in Montenegro. So, yeah, I think we'll qualify.
As Rory said, it's still in our hands.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's right.
Most importantly,
he's right.
We still have to play Montenegro. So
yeah.
I think at half-time, I think it was definitely, we were on top.
Mm. Oh, I agree.
Despite having not really created much.
Yeah.
I mean, Welbeck, I think, worked really well, but I think he kind of got some good positions in the final third, but didn't quite have the quality to ever make the right final pass to Rooney, I think, who also had quite a good game. But I think at half-time, it definitely looked like we were well on for victory, really. Mm. But then the second half completely turned around. The Montenegrins were much straight in our face kind of thing, closed us down. And I think that made the real difference. They came out much more intensity and we couldn't really deal with it. And their goal was coming for so long.
Yeah.
I think when it was only kind of like an hour gone in the game, you looked in and thought, how has it only been 15 minutes? We're never going to see out another half an hour of this. There's so many kind of scrambles from set pieces where we looked really vulnerable. I think that's probably partly down to, I guess, an unused to a new kind of centre-back partnership that didn't really... hadn't had much experience playing the season themselves.
I think it was a combination of the two things. They definitely came out and got in our faces, and that suited their game, and they were able to, you know, in the intimidating atmosphere, you know, kind of create momentum that led to a goal. But also, we just looked like we'd kind of run out of ideas, which is why I think, you know, we just need a bit more creativity in the middle, which we just didn't have at all in the second half. Which is a shame. So, you know, a fitter squad.
Yeah, we were quite depleted.
I think we'll be okay.
But do you not think it was a case that Hodgson should have changed it?
But then,
because they were all over us for quite a while.
He's coming for some flack, but if you look, the bench wasn't particularly good in terms of
but
who there really was on.
Even
to change it.
Just changing someone like Lampard or Parker for Cleverley would have just changed it. Surely, you know, with a bit more experience, a bit more grit in that midfield. Might have helped us sort of get on the ball a bit more, because we made pretty much half the amount of passes we made in the second half than we did in the first half.
No, I can't argue that they would have made it. I think they probably would have made a difference. But, you know, you're not bringing on, you know, people who are going to start, you know, running it. You know, it's a shame you didn't have someone like Walcott to bring on who is just going to start running at a tired defence and things like that. I don't know whether Lampard would have made that much difference in that instance.
Yeah, I think if you wanted to keep the ball and create possession, then we had the three midfielders who were going to do that, but they were given so little time on the ball that they really struggled to deal with it.
Yeah.
I think
that was the main
change, I think.
So we needed someone to utilise space or be, you know, kind of do something very different.
Should
like,
Ashley
like
Young
Walcott would have given
not have come on earlier then?
Yeah, that could be argued.
He probably should have come on before the goal, I thought.
Well, I think Hodgson said like he was debating making a change just as they'd scored and hadn't quite got around to it kind of thing. And then
at that point it was too late, because it would have to be a different change anyway.
I don't think he should have admitted that, really. You know, you didn't. You know,
well, he got asked, and I guess
did they make all three before their goal?
The goal scorer was the substitute, obviously.
Damjanovic. They brought on forwards, basically. He was very bold in his changes. Having kind of like, there was quite a lot built up. Montenegro were going to be quite difficult they're going to be good. Like, a lot was made of Vucinic and Jovetic, neither of which really turned up in the first half especially. And so they kind of really, they were quite poor in the first half, I think. And going behind,
apart from that Macy run from Vucinic quite early on, but that was,
yeah, that was early, but even then
that was a bit of an exception. Yeah,
and that didn't really come of, nothing came of that either. He just sort of ran inside and then that was about it.
Yeah,
but he started out on the right, didn't he?
But then he got pushed into the middle quite quickly, didn't they? And then they were kind of, they had to be more aggressive to kind of react to the goal, and that kind of just left meant we could kind of control the game a bit more.
Do you think they were a side that we didn't know maybe enough about in terms of our preparation? They were a bit of an unknown quantity. We had played them obviously in the previous qualifiers, but do you think, you know, they're one of these teams that no one really knew about apart from the two forwards?
I hate to think we also underestimated that would be the case.
I think as fans, maybe, you know, the expectancy you see that on the thing, and you know the fans and the press, they think, yeah, we should go over to Munster, we should be winning that. Look at the, you know, but in reality, I find it very hard to believe that Hodgson would be underprepared for their abilities and the venue. So, and we played there last year. They know it's a difficult place to go, and I actually do think we should be going there and winning. But we shouldn't, you know, we should not be expecting to go there and win 3-0. You expect a fight, right. and they're going to do that and get in your faces and you know,
and they have a lot to play for as well.
Fair play to them, and they could qualify for a World Cup, which would be huge for them.
Yeah.
As winners. Yeah,
Incredibly impressive outright. for a country with such a small population that only achieved independence 6-7 years ago. It's quite incredible.
Yeah.
And they got a great, I mean, they're obviously incredibly passionate about football. Everything. Fantastic fans.
So much so that they fight amongst themselves.
Yeah. There was a lot of riot police there, weren't there?
Mm. Incredible.
There was a great headline in their national daily. Something like you might have invented a beautiful game, but we've won it off you, as if they have now claimed the crown of the footballing greats.
Well,
not sure it's quite happened yet.
That's similar to the US England one from the World Cup, isn't it? Where, like, USA win 2-2, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So I think there's a queue of nations who have succeeded in winning the beautiful game off us.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't think Montenegro. Well, we've only won the
beautiful game once.
We won it
one more time than
everyone
Montenegro.
Seen that, talking of the World Cup, has anyone seen that the roof is falling off of the stadium that's supposed to be hosting the opening game?
Oh, you're joking.
Well, yeah, in Brazil. And they've closed it indefinitely. Yeah.
They've had a lot of problems building it. Massive kind of infrastructure.
Yeah.
Redevelopment stuff.
Yeah.
I think they've been getting hassled by FIFA. Yeah.
What is it? What's the team? It's Botafogo or...
Botafogo.
Botafogo. They don't have a ground at the moment because the roof's falling off.
That's not good.
No.
This always happens, though, isn't it?
It does, of course it does.
So it'll be all right on the night.
It'll be all right on the night. Oh, it will be amazing in Brazil. Amazing.
Well, I think the Maracanã is like the main stadium for the final, isn't it? They've been redeveloped.
I'm sure that'll be fine.
Because that was not a safe place to have 100,000 people. No. Not that ever stopped them.
Yeah.
No.
So I think they've nearly finished that. Yeah. It's a mess.
Yeah.
So talking of countries in those sort of Balkan states that obviously proven to be very good at football, Croatia came from behind
seamless
to win 2-1 away at Wales when Gareth Bale had scored from the penalty, obviously. That Who else but Gareth
early,
Bale?
Very early on, wasn't it?
Yes, and then obviously Croatia came back to fight back to win 2-1, and Eduardo from Arsenal, obviously, and he's still playing for the national side and scored the winner. And Mick, you watch this game.
Yeah.
Do you think that Wales might have deserved to draw against Croatia?
Yeah, I think a draw would have been fair. It was a really good game, actually. Both sides created a lot. Bale should have put them 2-0 up about 5 minutes after he put the penalty away. Just before the penalty, actually, Croatia, for the 5 minutes preceding the goal, Croatia had 85% of the possession, and it was all them. And so I think Wales were actually lucky to get away with getting to 1-0, like, well, it was definitely a penalty.
It looked a bit soft to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he was heading away from the goal and the ball would probably run out, but he did trip him, I think.
Anticipated contact.
Yeah, he went down easily.
I think it was a penalty, and Bale obviously put it away.
Gareth Bale school of...
Yeah.
Not diving.
And Bale put it away, which swung it in Wales's favour. I think he should have scored another. A player of his... It was a difficult chance, but a player of his quality and his form should have put that away. And that the fact that he didn't, I think, is kind of the turning point. And then Croatia were basically on top for the rest of the game. But Wales defended admirably, and it was a good game. And in the end, I think Croatia just edged it.
The guy that gave away the penalty got the equaliser, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
He did.
Yeah.
With a thunderous strike.
But I think Mihail should have done better.
Yes, and the same for Eduardo's goal. But it's always nice as an Arsenal fan to see Eduardo still playing, still standing up.
Where was Bale playing for Wales?
Well, anywhere he wanted. It's seriously, in the first half, he was anywhere he wanted.
That's fair. No, I think that's how it should be for Wales when they haven't really got anyone else to really do it.
Robson Kanu did a lot of work, kind of making up for the fact that there was space that Bale was leaving empty, so as to make space for himself elsewhere. So Robson Kanu did a good job, and they complemented each other well. It's a shame that Wales will really struggle to qualify now.
Oh, I think it's
I think that's the end of it.
Belgium and Croatia now streaks ahead, as you'd expect, really, because as we obviously know, Belgium, a lot of their players play in the Premier League. They have an unbelievable team on paper, and it's coming together for them in this group. And Croatia, for many years now, Croatia have been a really...
Yeah. You know, we thought they were fading away a bit towards the end. Kind of, they obviously done well the last few kind of tournaments. We've obviously, England faced them quite a few times in qualification, but they kind of faded away towards the end of Bilic's reign. The guy that's come in, Stimac, sporting an excellent flat cap at the games, kind of revitalised them, really.
Yeah. They seem to have produced quite a few talents over the last decade or two.
And they find them in Brazil.
That always helps.
Yeah, you'd probably say that's the end of it for all the other home nations except for Ireland, who are now in joint second with Sweden and Austria, all on 8 points.
Doing their best to make it as hard as possible for them.
Yeah, conceding a last-minute goal to a deflected shot is a bit of a killer when you could go out and out into second, which I think in that group would be huge for Ireland. Germany are going to qualify in that group, no worries. But yeah, Jonathan Walters found his shooting boots to score from the penalty spot for a change and then scored a good header. But yeah, Ireland definitely should have saw that, seen that game out.
I think it's a shame that it's looking like it will be only us. Because it's always great fun when there are home nations. It just provides a little bit more interest back here when a World Cup is going on. I think it's a real shame.
I wanted
all of them to
not meaning to patronise.
Exactly.
Scotland are out, and it doesn't look like Wales will. And Scotland's I don't terribly. Think Ireland will either. Oh yeah,
they've got 2 points.
They're not very good, really.
No,
are they?
No, they're not.
But still, you still expect them to be slightly better than that.
Really. Yeah, I think Wales. I thought this when Gary Speeds was managing them. I do think that they have increasingly a larger amount of talent, and certainly more than Scotland. There's been a definite shift in power between Wales and Scotland over the last few years, as we saw when Wales beat Scotland at Scotland. And I think, I think if Speeds, you know, hadn't died at that time, that crucial time, I think there would have been a bit more continuity. We saw Coleman struggling in his first almost year in charge, and now he's found some form. I think Wales might have... I think it's a very difficult group, but I think they would have pushed Croatia and Belgium a lot further had they had that more continuity.
Yeah, but positive for Wales going forward with Euro qualification
I hope so. I think they stand just as good a chance as the Republic of Ireland to qualify for the next major tournament, personally.
Okay, I'd like to see Wales there.
I think it was just finding the right kind of... getting the best out of the team before he passed away.
And as an Arsenal fan, shame. Much of pain's been to see. I do always feel sorry for players.
But players of quality as Bale,
they should be on the biggest stage, which is the Euros, the World Cup, and the Champions League. It would be great to see him in an international tournament, really.
And even Joe Allen, the crab, you know, sort of shimmying across that in front of the back four.
I'm not
sure
anyone's going to miss watching Joe.
One of the world's greatest talents, Joe Allen.
A tournament could not be accused of being robbed of a talent in Joe Allen, I don't think.
He's got his place, but
he's got his place.
It's not very exciting.
Yeah. £15 million worth of player right there.
Good.
Anyway.
Okay. Moving on. We've got some Brazil to talk about. Brazil is obviously doing this world tour. Their global tour. And I went to the game at Stamford Bridge against Russia, where they were rather disappointing in their 1-1 draw. And they had to equalise very late on through Fred. It's amazing that he's still there,
their
number nine. But
that is Hulk, not progressive from Brazil, which is what you should historically expect from them.
As they normally do recently. I mean, they didn't look as though they had any idea of what they were doing. They don't look like they train together. They're very much sort of ad-lib, play the ball through Hernanez quite often. I thought Hernanez did rather well provided some structure in that midfield, and he was able to distribute the ball quite neatly.
Yeah, he was solid in midfield.
He was solid, and he actually pressured the ball. He was one of the few players that actually went in to make any proper tackles. Kaká came into his own a little bit in the second half. Hulk was obviously a very crucial substitution and changed the game, really, when Russia were winning 1-0 through a very, very scrappy goal that seemed to take them an eternity to want to put the ball in the back of the net, which was contrary to the way that they played the game. They looked as though they meant more business than Brazil. They looked far more organised. Capello looks to have got them quite well organised.
But is that not the case, though? Russia are doing really well in qualifying. They play many games. Always
maximum points.
Competitive, yeah. And then whereas Brazil are just kind of, they get together every so often on these ridiculous kind of world tour.
Yeah, what was the bizarre places.
They rely really on that.
What was the attendance?
The attendance was good. They weren't selling tickets for the upper tier of the East Stand, but all the other sections were almost full.
And was it a very young
it's still quite
crowd.
Pricey to go.
A young crowd.
Yeah, like you tend to get it under 20
yeah,
miles,
yeah. Or? I mean, some of the tickets,
a high pitched roar,
were being sold for £25, and then there was £55 for the the Matthew Harding.
I can't see what, and the atmosphere is never going to be kind of partisan, and I don't.
It was interesting. No, yeah. So it was a mixed crowd in terms that they weren't separated, this seemed to be more Brazilian supporters. At least they were certainly noisier, and they were instigated the Mexican wave. It was quite interesting because you have two cultures that are rather different to each other.
Yes,
but they're both
nature.
Yeah, they are. You know that area of London seems to have quite a lot of both of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was quite a good friendly to organise for that. But you have Russians and Brazilians next to each other. It's quite bizarre.
But I just in terms of the football, I can't really see how it's benefiting Brazil and Brazilians.
Scolari's come out and said.
And why don't they want to play football in Brazil, which is leading up to the biggest kind of four and 6 years of their kind of sporting history? It's going to be absolutely huge.
They're getting a lot of money
from
sponsors, I think, for this. They've got sponsors who kind of push them to play the proper games.
Obviously,
their stadiums are in.
But they can have a lot of money very quickly by playing at Stamford Bridge, or they could go and play in Brazil with the Brazilian people in a country that's going to be hosting the two biggest sporting tournaments in the world.
That's what Scolari's come out and said. The manager said, "we need to play more games.
Well, he's right.
For our home fans,
he's right. It's ridiculous. Pressure
is going to be incredible.
And this game,
it's corporate football, and that's why Brazil are playing badly. And the way that they're going to sort this out is by getting their players together in Brazil, playing in front of a crowd. Far more of a kind of, this is our country, and we're fighting to do well in the world. But at this rate, they are not going to do well in the World Cup, and it'd be really sad if they don't do well in the World Cup.
Their next game is in Bolivia, of course. I have no idea. There could be anyone they could be playing.
Yeah, well, it's ridiculous.
It might be Bolivia, I guess. It could be
Papua New Guinea.
away. Potentially. It's just plucked out of thin air.
And Neymar
really annoys me because I want Brazil to get all the way. Not to England's expense, but I don't think I'll have to worry. I don't think I'll have to worry about that. I'd love to see Brazil go all the way in Brazil. It would just be incredible. But at this rate, they're just messing it up.
There's obviously a lot of hype over Neymar. There always is whenever he takes the field. And
he normally disappoints.
He disappoints because, in my opinion, he plays a completely different style of football. Were he to play in Europe, I just can't see him fitting into that. He'd have to completely change. He plays, in open spaces. He likes to, shimmy and do tricks. But that's not necessarily penetrating the defence. It's not necessarily assisting goals or creating goals. It's just not effective football in Europe. And there were a lot of cheers whenever he sort of skipped past your player, but he'd inevitably lose it before be able to provide a crucial final ball. And that's almost Brazilian supporters maybe getting the wrong idea about what Neymar's actually bringing to the team. I thought Hernanes was far more incisive. Hulk, obviously, when he came on. And these are the players that really changed the game for Brazil. I just don't think that they understand quite what Neymar brings to that team.
I can't remember who it was writing in The Guardian who said that he's already set himself up to be the next Ibrahimovic kind of thing. Mm. He's always showing off his talents, but never really understood by English fans of the game, really. I think he massively needs to move to at least test himself in new waters. Mm. I think he's probably far too comfortable in Brazil, where he's been the next big thing for years and years and years.
Mm. And will continue to be so until he's 30.
Yeah.
Good. So we'll talk a little bit, very briefly, about Spain-France, which was a huge game in qualification at the top of their group yesterday. And Spain came out 1-0 winners, and Pedro was the goal scorer. There was obviously a, you know,
Pedro just about bundled it in really from a Monreal cross.
Yeah, and they, I guess Spain really had to win that. That was a huge win for them.
Yeah, so they were 2 points behind France. Had a disappointing draw on Friday, I think, against Finland, which no one really would have expected, least of all the Spanish. So I think they kind of needed to win this to be assured of getting out of. Needed to win that, be assured of not avoiding the playoffs, which I think as England fans will be grateful for. I think they kind of looked like the better team, to be honest, than France. I think they kind of, as much as with Barcelona's anticipated second leg performance against Milan, their rumours of their death were greatly exaggerated, really. And I think they did. They turned up and they did it when they needed to. That's not to say France didn't have a few chances. Ribéry was kind of important on the break. Valdez made a couple of really good saves in for Iker Casillas. I think your favourite man, Paul Pogba, in his second cap, I think, for France.
Yeah.
He managed to get himself sent off in a minute, 2 yellow cards. One for a kind of, he jumped up for a header ball with Xabi Alonso, I think. And as he jumped, like, extended his leg and basically kneed Alonso in the back of the head, which, yeah, you could say you get it given as a yellow, I think. Was the second
he likes
one.
To put himself about.
He's a big lad for. And then the second one, he caught Xabi on the ankle with his studs, which was definitely yellow. So he kind of had to go. So I think, yeah, it's Spain. I don't think anyone ever really expect them not to. I think, as usual, they kind of get their doubters when they occasionally stumble. I think Del Bosque said, we've played like 20 qualifiers and like run up to the last few tournaments. They've only drawn two of them.
Mm. They did exactly what England didn't they? We beat our San Marino, but we didn't beat Montenegro. A disappointing draw against Finland, but they've done it when it matters. Beat the big teams on the big stage.
Sure.
Exactly, yeah.
It's a smaller group, so there's only a couple of games left, I think.
Yeah.
So there was really no room for error, and they did it when it counted, just about.
And that was the second time they've played France in this group, isn't it? They won't have to face them again.
Yeah, they drew in the first game. Right. I think France can score equaliser in the last few minutes.
Good, okay. So we look forward to seeing Spain in Rio, and do we think that they can win the fourth tournament?
It'd be stupid to think they couldn't.
But yeah,
are we going to? We put our neck on the line. Quite interested to see what predictions we have here. For Rio, it's a very interesting tournament.
At the moment, for me, it's Spain, Germany, and Argentina.
Right,
okay. Spain.
I'm actually back in Germany. I think Spain will either meet Germany in the semi-finals or the finals, and Germany will win.
Yeah, I think Germany are the force to be reckoned with. Certainly,
there's still a lot of football to be played, I guess. We get there,
there is a lot.
None of them have actually qualified yet. So
yeah.
No. Can this be England's year?
What is it? I can't even do the maths, is it?
It's not even this year, actually. Can next year be
48 years of hurt. No, I think I'm out there.
I think.
Can yeah. Holland? Can I Holland do anything?
No.
Everyone always tips Holland.
Dark horses.
Piers Morgan, I remember doing that ahead of the Euros. He was convinced it would be Holland.
Well, they've done well in qualifying, as usual. Alan, they've got some younger players coming through in midfield, but at the back, it's still relying on the old heads that aren't quite good enough, really.
Or Ron Vlaar.
Johnny Huizing is kind of your key centre back. Then you're always.
Who was it in Holland's group in the World Cup? They had Portugal,
Denmark, and Germany,
and Alan Hansen. All the BBC pundits predicted their like top four, and Alan Hansen picked Portugal, Germany, and Holland
all to go through from the group.
All together, all to get through the final four.
Very sensible. Yeah.
So that's what a good pundit he is.
Mm. Indeed, that's who we're trying to replace, guys. So we'll talk a little bit about. Championship and lower league managerial merry-go-rounds after a short break. Real fans, real opinions. Welcome back to Football Meekly. And before we start talking about Nigel Atkins joining Reading, we'll have a bit of trivia from Steve Guyford.
Yeah, I think you'll get this one, but I'm asking who has become the youngest player in Europe to earn his 100th international cap and whose record did he beat?
Well, I know the first part, but not so much the second.
Anyway, we'll let you all know about that at the end of the show. So it was announced earlier this week that Nigel Atkins had joined Reading. Obviously, they signed Brian McDermott a couple of weeks ago.
McDermott.
What did I say?
Signed. They've sacked.
He's getting his definitely. Play. Yeah. He's going to play again.
Well, no, he had a good playing career. I think he played for Yeovil at one point. But
anyway,
that defines so any good playing career.
He can definitely play well into his 40s, however old he is. So obviously no one, not one of us, I think, you know, thought that was a particularly good move to sack McDermott. There was, you know, a bit of uncertainty as to what, you know, what they were thinking with that, because obviously he got them promoted. It's quite unceremonious in the way that it had been done. And then, you know, if Reading almost certainly looked like they're going down, he surely would have been one of the better managers to get them back up. That was surely, you know, what they should have been thinking. Nigel Adkins has now been signed, and he obviously has good pedigree of getting clubs promoted, did it at Southampton from League One and from the Championship. Do you think that that's why they've signed him, and do you think that they have any hope at all of him keeping them up in the Premier League?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, let's not forget, they're not out of it yet. It doesn't look great, but they're still in with this chance of staying up. You know,
It seemed a strange move to get rid of. Sorry, I keep wanting to call him Heston, but no, Brian McDermott. Sorry, to get rid of him. I mean, they'd lost five on the bounce, but it wasn't really going to get much better. Sacking the manager is obviously only half the job, and who you bring in is more important. Almost, I don't think Adkins is going to really provide them with much. Going to make too much of an impact.
Sacking the job seems to be about 5% of the job. They just, you know, yeah, he willy nilly just sack him, and then it's an enormous trying to get someone in who's going to.
It's going to improve things. It doesn't seem to be much
so annoying.
Much of a change, really. I think Adkins has got his first game at the weekend against Arsenal, which is not really... If you're looking to get your lift off your first game, then you wouldn't really want to be going to Arsenal, where Reading obviously conceded a lot of goals this season, as has Adkins obviously in his game with Southampton.
As have Arsenal, actually, conceded a lot of goals at Arsenal.
Yeah, that's true. They did score five as well.
Yeah.
Reading managed to thrash someone and also get thrashed themselves.
Yeah.
So I think it seems a strange move, really. The Reading owners have said they're going to back him, Adkins, in the summer to make transfers, presumably with the parachute payments if, as expected, they go down. But it just seems like for like, there's not a great deal of improvement. I can't really
if
see.
Back him in the summer. Why didn't they back McDermott in January? I mean, it's ridiculous because they signed League One players when they're in, you know, in January.
Free fall.
You don't do that if you want to stay up in the Premier League.
No.
And well, as far as appointing Adkins, you could probably say it's a Joe Allen appointment, as in a sideways move. Whereas Southampton, you know, I think. Well, in my opinion, at least, I'm sure if George had stuck around for the second half, he might agree. You know, Pochettino probably offers you a bit more than Adkins would.
Well, he's at least something different, whereas...
Yeah.
Adkins, he's a motivator, isn't he? He kind of brings in... I mean, hopefully, they're hoping that maybe he can kind of pick up the morale at the club. They've lost six on the bounce. Five or six? Six, I think, now, with Man United a couple of weeks ago. So, obviously, you kind of get a bit of positivity back in the club. But not much
else,
really.
He's a very positive man, isn't he?
that's yeah.
Win, lose, or draw.
He's cheery. He's chipper. But he's never really been that... I don't think he's going to make too much of a difference, really.
Yeah.
Do you think that he's going to need to change that personnel dramatically? Or do you think he's the sort of manager that could do a decent job with the players available?
Well, obviously, he's going to
really
have to.
He's not got much room to change.
No, sorry. In terms of if in the summer they've said that they'll give him a lot of money, do you think... Do you think he's going to really need to make many changes?
Well, they were a good Championship side that got up on the back of really good form. They weren't really an exceptional team. They weren't one of those teams that kind of runs away with the Championship every few years. I think they would need some strengthening, especially if they can't. I mean, I can't really imagine they're going to lose an awful lot of players. They've not got any really standout men. Maybe Lafondre might find a new home. I don't know.
But Grimniak will think he's too good for the Championship.
Probably.
Yeah. I imagine his wages are probably quite
high. Yeah, his wages will be hefty. But yeah, you know, we've already spoken about the parachute payments, which are huge, and in fact will increase the sort of money that the teams that have previously got relegated, how much money they're getting. So Bolton will still get more money and all that. But yeah, to answer your original question, I definitely think this was an appointment made with the relegation in mind.
Okay. Good. And the other managerial appointment of the week is Phil Brown at Southend, replacing Paul Sturrock. And what do we think of that, guys?
Replacing except for one game. Paul Sturrock's still getting
this
the...
This is so strange.
He's still getting the final.
Really strange.
It's...
Don't have to be sentimental about it.
Johnson Paints Trophy final.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember who pointed it out, but like Phil Brown at Southend sounds like an ITV2 kind of reality TV show. A fly on the wall. It's going to follow him around. And it's just, I don't know. I don't really have much time for Phil Brown.
No.
Especially when he's taking other people's jobs.
Yeah. You could just go and just imagine wandering around Southend with his bloody Britney Spears style microphone, barking orders, singing on the pitch.
Yeah, it'll be
fine down in Southend of the town.
We're thinking, is that the reason why he was appointed at Southend?
Because
he sent in a picture and he is a bit it was all sealed.
He is more tanned than Sturrock. I mean,
significantly.
He's a younger model. Yeah. I think also I'd advise everyone who hasn't seen it to go on the Southend website and look at their statement regarding the managerial change. It's hilarious. It's like a PowerPoint presentation.
It is.
It's like, I imagine it's Phil Brown's case. It's got flashpoints. Sometimes business decisions are bullet point, hard. Bullet point, difficult.
Necessary.
Bullet point, necessary. And it's just like, who is running that club? It's so budget. I mean, it looks like Work Experience Boys put it together. Yeah. It's terrible.
Hey, it might be. So.
But hopefully Sturrock manages to win the final.
Yeah, that would be a big two fingers up, wouldn't it?
Then literally puts two fingers up. I'd like to see him go with Postal.
Who are they playing in the final? Because they beat Leyton Orient, I think, in the semi, didn't they?
I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
It's such a big trophy. Yeovil got to the quarters of it. We lost to Leyton Orient, which was great. It looks like we won't even get promoted.
That's a tangent.
This is a bit of a tangent. talking about the championship, let's have a little talk about the player of the year, which was announced last week. At the end of last week, we had
still with 10 games to go.
Yeah,
it's ludicrous how they pick the championship player of the year before the playoffs and things like that. Because what if what if a player were to come out and score 20 goals? I mean, it's not going to happen. But
in the playoff final?
Yeah,
they would deserve it. Once he scored
like 6 or 7 in the playoff final, you may as well stop.
Yeah.
But when do they finish doing the nominations? It's kind of around Christmas time, isn't it?
Yeah, we found out that Murray and Vidra and all that were nominated 2 months ago, maybe. Yeah. So start of the year.
Why is it?
Not a clue.
They do it so early. It's strange.
If you actually watched it, which sadly enough I did.
Did you watch all the way down to League Two?
Oh, well, I didn't really do it like that. They actually spoke about League Two before midnight for a change. But
the whole thing finish?
11, I think. Right. I sort of filtered in and out of it. There were some laughable awards going on. But
a night in the life of Steve Guy.
The whole production of it was just dreadful. I mean, they picked the lesser of three evils by putting Manish there to present it.
We talked about it. So he's got competition from Clem and
Leroy Rossini
and Steve Claridge. So Manish Bashin is by far the best.
Four
horsemen of the apocalypse.
I just don't understand how the system works and who they choose wins.
Obviously, the big prizes went to Vidra, won Championship Player of the Year, and Tom Ince won Young Player of the Year. And you had people in both.
Young Player, you had the three nominations were Wilfried Zaha, who won it last year, Tom Ince, and Vidra. Player of the Year, you had Vidra, Ince, and Murray. How is Vidra good enough to win the Player of the Year, but not Young Player of the Year? Are you saying that he's a better player than Tom Ince? But he's not a better young player than Tom Ince.
Yeah, it's strange. The Caps, you should really only be able to be nominated for one.
How either of them beat Glenn Murray to that award, what would have beaten Glenn Murray to that award, is just ludicrous. The guy's scored 29 league goals.
He is top scorer, James.
That's nine more than Vidra.
Vidra's only fourth top scorer.
You're arguing with yourself here, Steve. We all agree with you.
Surely
Charlie Austin is scratching his head saying, why aren't I in this? I've pretty much carried Burnley. In the same way Murray has us and Vidra has Watford.
Yeah.
It's just crazy and flawed. And I've calmed down about it.
The Pozzo family, has some sort of influence. Yeah, I don't know. They have a lot of influence
in many
different countries. wanted this award, I think.
Sailing close to the libel wind here. Yeah. I don't think they're listening. I can imagine Vidra would probably be heading back to
Udinese
next year then. Unless Watford get promoted, maybe.
Could he be a good replacement to Di Natale? Well, exactly. If Watford do get promoted,
Di Natale is never going to retire.
It'll be really interesting to see what the Pozzo family does in terms of using its resources, because they have Granada as well, as we know. And will they put more emphasis on Watford than, say, Udinese? Because Watford in the Premier League would be a huge commodity.
It's just they've got more sentimental ties.
Strengthen it as much as they can to, I don't know, make as much money as possible. There's probably more money in the Premier League than Serie A.
Going back to the Empower Award kind of stuff, Paul Sturridge win? Was he nominated?
Yeah, Paul Sturridge was nominated for Outstanding Managerial Achievement. as was Malky Mackay, who has loads of cash to play with. And the rightful winner was Parkinson, who won it for his Bradford Cup run.
Yeah.
That was quite a funny moment. Yeah. Sturridge had literally just been sacked.
Yeah.
And he's nominated for Outstanding Managerial Achievement.
Is that like one of those like lifetime awards, or is it more
it's sort of what they've done over the season.
Oh, in that case, yeah. And that makes it all the stranger.
Before we go on to trivia, there's a the life of a footballer is very strange. Jack Wilshere was just posted on Twitter a picture of him autographing kind of an Arsenal superfan's arm next to the cannon that's tattooed on his bicep. And then the next picture he's tweeted is the man getting this tattooed, Jack Wilshere's tattooed.
The signature tattooed underneath the
cannon. Yeah. It must be very strange having someone want your signature tattooed on their arm.
Yeah.
Anyway, just thought it was a strange snapshot of the life
on
of
that,
the football.
On that note.
On that bombshell.
Yeah.
Back to the trivia. Let's have a look at the trivia. And
Who is the youngest player to get the 100 international caps?
So Alex thinks he has an idea, so we'll ask you two first.
Well, yeah, I know the first half, which is Lukas Podolski.
Lukas Podolski is actually the second half now. He's just been overtaken by someone.
Oh, sorry. Can you repeat the question again? It's
who's become the youngest player to reach 100 international caps in
Europe.
And whose record they took. This player took Podolski's record, who's...
Oh, so you got the second part right.
Yeah, which I didn't think I knew. Yeah. Do they play for Spain?
Surprisingly enough,
they do.
Iniesta?
No, it's not Iniesta.
Is it Fabregas?
Nope.
No. Never 100 caps. Piqué?
No.
Ramos?
Ramos. Sergio Ramos is the correct answer.
Well, yeah, how old is he? Must he 25?
26. And a couple of hundred days.
Oh, you mean you don't know exactly?
Well, I had it.
How was Podolski?
27?
Podolski, he was 27.
When he won it, anyway.
When he won it.
Right.
Well, he won it, he didn't get an award, but when he became the youngest player, yeah.
Right, okay, good. Okay, well, we look forward to some more trivia next time. And
football as well, actually.
Yes.
We're mainly here for football.
Bring back the domestic football.
Yeah, thank God the interlull's over.
Mm. Indeed, yeah. We're looking forward to some more Premier League.
Bring back Easter football.
Serie A, Bundesliga, all the big ones.
Mm. Championship.
FA Cup replays on April Fools.
Next week, if we're even in London. But
there'll be some people around. It might be a slightly depleted crowd.
Mm. Indeed.
I'll be trying and failing to ski.
Okay. I won't. Well, actually, no, I won't. I can't ski. I'll just be skiing.
Okay. Enough about our lifestyle.
Later. Yeah, yeah. Look forward to next week.
Yeah.
Listen to our Splinter podcast, Skiing Meekly.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Or Skiing Bleakly.
Yeah. Very good.